You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast here recording live at Hendox on North High Street. Bart Logan with you. We do not have Brian Phillips with us this week. He's on vacation. Hope he's having a good time. But we do have another somewhat familiar crew-related voice. You might recognize this one, the Neil Sika, joining us along with Patrick Murphy and Mike Roski. But Neil, on behalf of my comrades over here, welcome to the Mass Report.
Bart, gang, there's only one Massive Report podcast, and it's always good to be back on with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Totally clipping that out.
That's right. You can use it. Oh, promo sign-off.
Neil, I wish it was a sort of, you know, better circumstances.
I think we all do, right?
We could, yeah, have you here, but instead we're here to recap another disappointing Crew SC loss to another, you know, below par the MLS East team. It seems like right now they seem snake bit, and when you lose 2-0 to an Orlando team that didn't manage much against them the entire night, that's certainly pretty disheartening. What, you know, watching that, what's your biggest takeaways as you've watched this team so far?
That it's getting late early. It's getting late very early. And I said this on the air a couple of times, and I think everyone would agree that the next 2 weeks of the season, 2-3 weeks, probably by the end of this month, this being July 1st, we're going to have a pretty good indication of where this thing is headed, if they're going to stay afloat, if they can manage something this week with Salt Lake and Seattle before they get their full complement of players back from international duty and injury, and then really set a lineup and make a run at this thing. But look, you guys have been watching MLS for years. We've said it on this show before, on my show, on whatever we may talk in the fabric of the team. Got to win your home games in MLS. You just can't continue to drop points on a regular basis. They've lost 5 times already. I think 8 is the record. I was looking that up today. 96, and they lost 7-13. And 2005 was the other time they lost 8 games. So you can say they're lacking the talent that they need, but these are winnable games. Sporting Kansas City, while they're down, Orlando City is a group you're competing with over the next 2 weeks for that 6th or 7th spot in the playoffs. So it's frustrating, and the coaches are frustrated. The players are frustrated, but no one feels sorry for you. I mean, everyone deals with injuries. Everyone deals with call-ups. And when push comes to shove, it's a team that's just not been able to score enough. And I think you could see a little bit of those warning signs going back to last year with the fact that, you know, they were shut out 12 times, and look at the middle of the summer till now, it's basically 1 every 3 games.
And you look at that, and you mentioned, you know, the injuries and all, obviously the call-ups. I counted maybe 3 starters, your starting 11 really, that were in that lineup. Although I count that Milton Valenzuela in your ideal. He's
sure
a guy out for the rest of the season. But, you know, yeah, Gaston Sarr in there. You've got either Artur or David Guzman starting at, you know, the center attack. And Pedro starting somewhere. But otherwise, and that's the one thing, the opportunity, the silver lining is, you know, for guys like a J.J. Williams, who I think fans were clamoring to see, they get an opportunity there. A guy like Luis Argudo, and do you feel like, and I'll open this to everybody, are the players that, you know, these periphery players, are they making the most of this opportunity right now?
That's an excellent question. Look, you want your depth to perform, and good teams allow their depth to perform. It also has to do with the product or the style that you play, and if they're going to continue to still morph out of Greg Berhalter-era soccer in a 4-2-3-1 and mostly keep a possession base and pass it around. You know, I could look at the Red Bulls opening day lineup for an example of plug and play. Mm-hmm. Come in, they can press and look really good and come away and feel like you can get a result. And there's no reason to think that the group that they have can't play well enough to at least get a draw, but there's a psychological standpoint involved. If they give up that first goal now, it's almost like they're stuck in this, oh, now what's going to happen? What are we going to do? And one goal turns into two, like a case like Saturday night. So you need to rely on that depth to come in and perform. So there's not that grace period anymore. If you're drafting say, a guy in the first 15 picks to come in. You need him to make an impact. Mm-hmm. Case in point, Chris Mueller, you know, seventh pick in the draft, and he's almost got 50 MLS games under his belt. Luis Argudo, J.J. Williams, they show flashes. Nico Hansen does the same thing, but you need them to have that impact maybe a little sooner than gradually bringing them along. Now, there are other factors with that, right? There's coaching change and playing style, and there's a different fit for everybody, but you kind of see other cases around the league, and you wonder when that may happen here.
I think with J.J., we saw there was a boost in play with him. He certainly looked better in this start than he did in the limited minutes that he had the prior game. He didn't get a shot on goal necessarily, but he had three shots overall. But also, he kept center backs at bay from Orlando. He was getting back defensively. So I thought we saw a better version of J.J. Williams. But in the end, a guy like him needs to score or at least get something on frame. And again, like you said, Neil, there's a variety of different factors. We're playing with a patchwork roster or lineup in that game in particular. But take advantage of it when you can. I mean, 10 shots against three, they scored two, we scored zero. That's a problem.
And I don't want to mix up my words either in saying that, you know, you're not, if J.J. Williams scores a goal, that's great. You're not expecting Luis Argudo to care. That's the job for a guy like Pedro Santos to make a difference. These guys can be complementary pieces, but I mean, when push comes to shove, it's all about what Caleb Porter's been talking about. Who can get the job done? And then you can look across the league right now, and it's still a young man's league where you've got homegrown talent affecting results. I mean, Dallas is a perfect example of that. I just mentioned Mueller.
Certainly New York.
Guys that can get right in there, feel comfortable, feel confident, and make their way and make an influence right off the bat.
One thing I really liked with JJ was posting. He was not happy with his performance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously he didn't score, but...
What do you have, one shot?
I think...
Two?
Yeah,
three
in
the end?
None of goals.
Yeah.
What did he say? He rated it like a C?
Yeah, so I asked him how he would grade himself, and he said, I give myself a C. He said, I just didn't... I have so much more to learn. I need to develop, and which is all true, of course, but he wasn't satisfied with what was even progress from the last game that we saw from him, right? And that's a good thing. That's what you want from a young player. And I know we're about halfway through the season, but we're finally seeing him kind of take the role seriously. It kind of seemed like he was kind of moseying around, whether it's in training or even in warm-up during games. But I don't know if it's something Caleb Porter said to him or whatever, but we saw a different JJ, and I hope that continues.
Comes from a military family. Thought he might go into the Marines, so he's got that discipline, that work ethic acumen, and I think that if he gets pointed in the right direction, he will show some promise. He only started playing soccer when he was 9, so... you know, I have hope for the kid, but all these guys, you hope for better, right? And you've gotten to know them, and a lot of the large part of what the team has been through the last two seasons, and it's been a good locker room, and on paper, success of making the playoffs. You want that to continue. I think that's where the frustration lies for me. The roster's good enough to be in 6th or 7th place in the Eastern Conference, so hopefully there's a nice about face in the second half here.
One thing you said earlier about the psychology of it, you know, losing can become contagious just like winning can.
Sure.
And I think these guys, while you know they've certainly gone through rough patches and there were certainly periods under Greg that weren't the best, none of them have gone through anything like this. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked to guys about kind of the mentality. You said there's pressure as soon as you step on the field. Okay, the forwards need to score. Well, if you give up a goal now, can the forwards score? You know, is the offense scoring? And it certainly started to play in to their mental, their psyche, especially the young guys who are getting an opportunity, knowing that they're on a team that's a losing team right now. And you know, I don't think many of them are used to that. Caleb Porter's not used to that. I mean, he's made that very clear.
Oh yeah.
You know, he'd never lost more than 4 MLS games
in a row, right?
And you know, so it's kind of uncharted territory, and I think it's really started to affect, you know, the pressure, like I said, when they're on the field. And if you can get that one win, and I pointed to the LA Galaxy game a lot as one that I thought maybe would start to turn things, but then you have LAFC and, you know, 3 days later, and that's
less than 48 hours later.
Yeah, and, you know, you're not expected to win that game with what you were putting out and what they had and whatnot. And so if they'd been able to kind of build some momentum off that, maybe that's where things start to turn, but they just haven't, you know. I thought it would happen with these last two games after the Open Cup.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up, Pat. Like, the law of averages in this league through the years, right? Orlando went through this hideous stretch last season, right? Two wins in 25 games. At some point, you think something goes your way.
Right.
And you get a win or you win a couple of games because you're never too far from feeling like you're right back into the mix if that happens. Hell, look at New England right now. Look at Colorado right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the sky was falling. Yeah. San Jose, they're ready to throw Almeida out the window after four games.
And right.
Now they're one of the most pleasing teams to watch in the league and having the most success. So I'm not saying that can't happen here in the second half, but they need to have their full complement. They have to figure out how they want to play because that's probably part of the struggle too, the transition of evolving from what they were so used to. And you've been in practice, you know, that the steps that front half possession and counter pressure and adapting hasn't been as easy as it has been said to be, or for some guys it probably is a little bit more of a difficult transition. So a lot of these factors come into play, but there's easy things to rectify in terms of the energy, the effort for home games when you know that points are imperative.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I think we all thought, and I think even Caleb thought, that this would be an easier transition than what it was in terms of the, because they're similar systems, but they operate differently, right? Mm-hmm. But I think he thought that going into it, this is a group that we can make something happen with. Fans thought that. I know I thought that. We talked about it prior to the season. And it shouldn't be such a difficult transition that we've seen. And I think now after, 17, 18 games, Porter kind of realized, we have to get some new blood in here because this is not going to work. It's over with this core group of players anyway.
Right. And I think one of the things that isn't being talked about enough, and maybe this is, again, with the absences, some of the injuries, but at their core, when they had their full spine, they're one of the harder teams to beat in the league. What kept them afloat last year when they got shut out 12 times is defensively, they're still pretty damn mm-hmm. good. This stretch, they've given up almost two goals a game. I mean, it's hard to win games doing that, so the defensive prone errors, or at least the timeliness of them, that all comes into play just as much as the lack of goal scoring.
Sure. Well, and that gets to, you know, one of the things that we talk about, you know, what you've got to, and can't make excuses anymore, but the fact is this team's gone from the biggest sure thing in that Zach Steffen, the guy who commanded and owned that from basically the second week of training camp when he came in three seasons ago, to now, you know, I'm not sure, was this indication that Kempin seems to be the one that they're going to pass the torch over to? Are they going to just go with a hot hand? Because there's not been none of these goalies, whether Kempin or the other who's now his name.
Joe Bendick.
There you go, Bendick, sorry. Neither has really impressed in any of their opportunities, and I feel like just the confidence or having that uncertainty there behind you for this defense is a detriment in itself, and I don't know how you can, you know, how do you move forward the rest of the season with these goalkeepers? Are we satisfied with them, or do they have to explore something in this transfer?
I mean, I think they have to explore. I mean, going into it, I felt like, hey, Bendick could be a serviceable guy. He's proven it in the league over the years. But I think, unfortunately, the indication of how important Steffen was in that Philadelphia game when Bendick, you know, gave up three. Not just Bendick, but, of course, the defense. And I think it was less him and more the collective. I mean, the back line itself didn't seem particularly confident in that game, whether it was because they were just used to playing with Steffen and there's communication issues. We also saw it in the LAFC game. If you remember the play with Mensa and Bendick, I mean, that was just a shameful goal, lack of communication there. So, yeah, they're going to have to explore. I think that should be priority numero uno, quite frankly.
I can tell you they are looking at goalkeepers, and I would expect to see one in here, perhaps in the summer transfer window, somewhere in the mid-level in terms of the European League. So keep an eye out on that. But look, it's nothing against John or Joe. I mean, they've all had their shots, and Joe has played on some bad teams in the past and thought didn't, frankly, get enough credit for some of his early games in Orlando when he was playing there. And John's been on four different loan spells. I think he's shown a little bit more composure, and being familiar with the way they've played is kind of why he's gotten the opportunity. I like this game in Minnesota. But when you lose, I'm not stretching this, when you lose maybe one of the top 25 goalkeepers in the world, I'd put Stephen maybe in that category, right? But that's a guy that gets you alone 12 to 15 points a season with the way he can play. I mean, look at his month of May last year. It's just it's astonishing. That's a huge drop for anybody that's going to come into that position. It's never good to be the understudy in a guy that has had such a meteoric rise, and rightfully so, as Zach Steffen. So, yeah, that's a big, big issue in terms of losing a player of his caliber and making sure everything's sturdy at the back.
But on the other side of the coin, you obviously aren't going to pick up any points, or at least not many points, if you can't put the ball in the back of the net yourself.
That's the game.
The Crew picking up, it's official now, as reported earlier last week by the Massive Report, but confirmed today, the Crew have completed a trade with Atlanta United to acquire backup forward Romario Williams. They sent $100,000 in Don Garber Fun Bucks of the general allocation variety to Atlanta to pick him up. So all our goal-scoring problems are solved, right?
Oh, yeah. That's from what I understand, we're good. I think he's going to get at least 20 as the season goes on.
That would be impressive. 20 goals in 16 games.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
From my guys that I've talked to that have covered him, Romario Williams, great guy. He's hungry. Only 21 games in MLS, but he scored with Atlanta United too. He scored with Charleston when Tata gave him a chance. Now, you're obviously not going to get a lot of minutes behind Joseph Martinez, but when he was in there, he played with some confidence. And same with Montreal. It was more of a cup of coffee because of his first two seasons with Drogba in the mix. But he's done well for Jamaica. I think he can run hot and cold. But when a coach can believe in him, he can succeed. And by all means, with everyone that has not been able to find the goal-scoring touch consistently for this team, he'll get his chance here. And maybe even this week with Wizardis still on international duty. Who knows?
Yeah, why not? And sometimes
he can't play till the ninth.
Well, all right, the ninth, yes, correct. So, well, then not this week.
The biggest thing is sometimes the old change of scenery change of scenery is what does it for some guys, and especially a young player like that. It could be that's what flips the switch. Sure. So
he's only 24.
Not? Yeah, mm-hmm. and to give up only 100 G's in Garber bucks, it's worth the risk.
It's whatever they paid for Justin Barron.
Yeah. Right.
Well,
yeah.
And I mean, at this point, you know, you've got to try something else. I mean,
you're taking a flyer on and trying to find anybody who can get the job done.
Yeah, he was a guy who was available. You know, he fits the kind of mold I think that they want of a target forward. And you know, it hasn't worked with Patrick Mullins. We talked about what we thought about JJ, but he's still young. He's
learning.
Him. Yeah, and with Giassi being out, and you need some depth. I mean, you need that position. Even if he's coming off the bench when Giassi gets back, you need to have somebody that can come in and be dangerous. And Patrick Mullins has done that to some degree, not so much this year. And you know, hopefully for the Crew's sake, this is a guy who can kind of develop in that role.
So, where do you envision him when a Giassi Zardes gets back? Does this mean that Crew that someone like Patrick Mullins is surplus? JJ Williams? I think JJ Williams is a guy that you want to be getting minutes. Certainly at his age, if he's not going to get those opportunities now because maybe a Romario Williams is ready to overtake him, is a little bit further along. Once Giassi Zardes comes back, is he a loan candidate? Or is this the end of the business that we can expect from Tim Bezbachenko purely just at the striker position this year?
I would certainly hope not. I mean, my thought is you can't have too many good strikers. You can't score too many goals, right? So I hope they keep looking. And really, to answer your first question, I think it's just competition, and that's what you want. And I think that's really what Caleb wants in training. You know, guys that are going to push each other and take
Absolutely.
It to the next level. I mean, we saw it in Portland. He would have Urruti start for a while. If he wasn't getting it done, Adi'd go, and then so on and so forth. And that's what you want. Now, is he going to take over Zardes? No. But at least he pushes JJ, and he's somebody that I don't think Porter really trusts the bench very much. Maybe this is a guy he can trust to come off and make it, or come on the field and make a difference.
International experience with a country that's on the rise, at least in terms of their regionality and being relevant in Jamaica. 13 games, couple of goals. I mean, that's not something that grows on trees, so he can make his impact and mark there. I think these next three transfer windows for the Crew, this summer, going into next season, even the summer after, that's really going to shape what this roster is going to look like and what Caleb Porter wants going forward.
Well, Neil, I'm going to ask you, what do you predict is going to happen for the rest of the... I'm sorry, Sam is giving me the signal. We've got to cut it off. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We can't hold you to
that.
Look,
I'm holding out hope if they can get full strength and... You don't have a lot to look at in terms of their road success right now. It's win at New England, but that's where they're going to have to make up some points. And if they need 7 to 9 wins to remain in the season and make that 6th or 7th spot, yeah, maybe they get a consistent group. And like I said, the earlier, if New England and Colorado can do it, Columbus can do it, because there is talent here, and it's just a matter of it all coming together and finding its harmony.
Well, Neil, we appreciate you coming together with us tonight, and I feel like we found some harmony here, kind of threw it together quickly. Yeah. But thank you so much.
It was a good rap session with you guys. It's always good to see you, and I hope you have a good 4th of July, everybody out there, and hopefully some good stuff coming the Crew's way in the second half of the season.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
We are back with the Master Report broadcast, brought to you by 180 Property Development, which creates uplifting environments that enrich the community life in Columbus, Ohio. Their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals aren't just dedicated to seeing projects from initial design. I need to write shorter copy for them, but they are terrific. Head to 180propertydevelopment.com. That is a run-on sentence if I've ever written one. I've written a handful of them. Bart,
see,
Logan,
that's what
you
get
you.
For when you stopped reading my copy.
Hey, you never sent me your copy. You only sent that to Brian.
Well, okay, fine.
That was Sam Fahmy. He is back with us. We've also got Mike Krosky and Patrick Murphy talking a little Crew. We're going to be getting into the U.S. teams. But first, there was a little something special that happened. Basically, the only silver lining, the highlight from Saturday, and it was a bittersweet one. At halftime, Ziggy Schmitt, Crew legend, inducted posthumously into the Crew Ring of Honor. Mike Krosky, you wrote the article on Massive Report about it, but tell us a little bit about how special that moment was and what Ziggy Schmitt's impact is here in Columbus, even still today.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, something I didn't realize, it's you know it, but you don't realize it, it doesn't resonate. Him only being here 3 years and the lasting impact that he had.
Right? It's like Ziggy Schmitt. Oh, you mean that like guy who's here for 10 years?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, it was 3 years. And I kind of forgot, you know, that he left, not kind of abruptly, but for Seattle. I was like, why is he leaving? You know, I remember thinking that at the time.
Yeah, he just won.
Yeah. But, hey, if you're going to go out, that's how you go out, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that speaks volumes of the type of person that he was. And, again, it wasn't just because he led them, the Crew to the MLS Cup and the only cup so far in franchise history. It's, again, all the players just gush about him. Anybody who met him just talks very highly of him. And I think that's the kind of lasting legacy you want as people. Yeah, if you're a coach, you want to win. If you're a player, you want to win titles. But if you're not doing kind of the trickle-down thing where you're making an impact from the bottom level up, which is certainly what he did with helping mentoring young players and young coaches, that's how you really leave a lasting legacy. So, you know, when they pulled the black, you know, sheet or whatever it was off the off his name, and I saw 06-08, I thought, wait a minute, that can't be accurate. But of course it was, and it really stinks that it happened after he passed away. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when he did pass away, when it was announced that he passed on, that it was just 4 months prior to that he was coaching in MLS.
Yeah.
And to think that, again, that he can go so soon. What?
I almost said, wasn't there some talk about him possibly coming back in like a GM capacity?
Right. Yeah, there was all kinds of talk. In fact, at the time, it was like they were talking about him and Bruce Arena, and they even mentioned like an Ali Curtis, and of course Bez was thrown in there. So, which made it even more unbelievable that if there was any kind of talk of him coming back to Columbus in a GM role, for him to pass away like that, it's still mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, Ziggy was, you know, Ziggy, and you wrote it really well. You know, he just was a legend in the true form of the word. And as I think you said in the article, like that term gets thrown around a lot, and so it probably doesn't carry the value that it should. But you talk about American soccer, you know, a guy who started coaching when he was, what, 23, I think?
Mm-hmm.
You know, worked his way to a great career coaching UCLA, the men's team there. You know, eventually comes to MLS and obviously has a ton of success, the all-time winningest coach in the league. Which trophy is it that's named after him? Is it MLS Cup? One of the trophies is named after him now.
It's the Coach of the Year Award.
There it is. But, I mean, just, you know, at every level, and even as a player, you know, I mean, it's kind of weird to think of it now because we knew Ziggy as this big guy who didn't move around a lot, but, you know, he was a pretty good player from all accounts. I remember, and I talked about this a little last week, talking to some of his friends at the MLS Cup party in 08 out in L.A., and just their stories about him on the field and, you know, what kind of player he was and how smart he was as a player and things like that. And, you know, that translates to coaching, at least it did for him. And, you know, any interaction I ever had with him when he was here was always great. Even when he came back with Seattle, I remember the first time Chad Marshall came back and, you know, we spoke with Chad, and then Ziggy wasn't even scheduled to talk, but he came over and, you know, was willing to stand there and talk for a few minutes about Chad just because he'd obviously coached him for quite a while. So, you know, it was great. And he was willing to answer questions about his time with the crew and stuff like that too. So, you know, like I said, I think he's a true legend for U.S. soccer, you know, and someone who I imagine, had he continued living longer, would have made an even bigger impact on all those around him.
Absolutely.
Yes, we certainly do. It was really moving, you know, for all fans there in attendance to witness that part. Bittersweet. Certainly thoughts again out to his family and everyone else with that. But certainly an enduring legacy, not just in Columbus, but within U.S. soccer. And that's where we'll turn here. And, you know, you talk about trying to create a legacy. That's what the U.S. women are trying to do right now. Not that they're trying to do it. They've already, most of the players on this team that, you know, competed and, of course, most notably captured that 2-1, was it, over France? Yep, 2-1 win last week on Friday. They're trying to get that to capture their fourth, I believe it'll be their fourth World Cup.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think it was 99-3, 15, and potentially 19.
So, I mean, boy, well, we're not even going to go back to talking. We'll talk about the men's team a little bit later. But, you know, for this team, Patrick, I mean, obviously coming in and with everything that you've got, this is a team that has Carly Lloyd coming off the bench. You've got pretty high expectations, and when we talk, you know, we're previewing this, you know, like the you know, final or World Cup is basically a bust.
Yeah,
you face France, arguably the toughest competition that you expected to see. You face them in the quarterfinals, and it was a close-ish game, but Megan Rapinoe for all the drama throughout the week, for all the criticism that was heaped upon her, really showed up, picking up both goals for the U.S., of course, and most notably just sucking the air out of that stadium in France. All, you know, a home field advantage, the host nation, and to go down 1-0 5 minutes in on a gorgeous, beautifully placed free kick, that was certainly something that was a little bit took the air out of their sails for the Blues.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week. It's been very interesting watching Megan Rapinoe score the way she has. Obviously, two penalty kicks in the earlier round, but you know, in this game, again, I didn't think she played the greatest game. She played fine. She was good. Comes away with two goals, and you know, that's what you want out of a player, I guess. Obviously, you want them to play well, but if she can bag two goals and, you know, push you through to the next round in a tournament like this, I think that's ideal. But I was impressed with the way they played. This was, like you said, the toughest opposition they've faced so far. France's was the other favorite, obviously the host nation, playing in Paris. And, you know, the U.S., it's been impressive, has handled the expectations very well. And they've done this before, as you mentioned. They've won multiple World Cups. But to do it not only with expectations, but against a higher talent pool. We talked about last week how I thought, at least, that this World Cup has been more fun to watch. Women's World Cup has been more fun to watch than previous ones because other teams have kind of not necessarily caught up with the U.S.'s level, but, you know, at least are starting to get there and showing signs. I mean, I remember watching, you know, two World Cups ago, even the last World Cup to some degree, and just, you know, I wasn't watching any of the other teams. The U.S. were running through a lot of stuff, and obviously they did early in the group stage and whatnot, but, you know, I think you've seen the level. You saw the level of Spain, who played them tight. France obviously played them tight, and, you know, they've been able to handle it. And I've been really impressed with them. You know, you never know what's going to happen in a single elimination style like they have now, but, you know, two more wins and they're bringing home the World Cup again. And at least right now, I don't see any reason why they won't do that.
Well, I mean, without Ralph, our U.S. Women's National Team correspondent, yes. It's not going to be as in-depth. But, yeah, I mean, they have a game tomorrow, right, at 3 against England. So,
and England's been another team. You know, that's obviously you think of England.
One of the other favorites.
Yeah, but I think they've even played a little bit better than what was thought. You know, they were a favorite, like you said, but I think just the way they've played and whatnot has been a step above maybe what some people back in England thought. At least from my understanding. But I think this will be another one where, you know, the U.S., almost in every game, I think in every game they scored in the first 7 minutes or so. I mean, if you can do that, that doesn't guarantee you a win, but it certainly helps. And, you know, we've talked about this with the crew, getting that first goal and whatnot. But, you know, if they can keep that up, you know, it just sets a tempo, sets a standard for that game. And I think that's been one of their biggest achievements is being able to do that. So, you know, hopefully they come out again and are able to kind of set that tone and get an early goal or at least, you know, grab the game and you know, advance that next round.
Oh, with the crew, final. If we can get a goal in the first 90 minutes,
yeah.
I'd be pretty happy.
Hey,
that certainly. And you look at, you know, the other side of the bracket where you've got Sweden, again, another team in USA's group playing Netherlands, and of course Sweden with the Pia Sundhage connection there. And it's just, it is what you look at the path that this team has had to take, you know, going through Spain, going through France, going through England, after already, you know, defeating Sweden. If they can go through England, but I think it's going to be hard to. And, you know, argue that this team isn't deserving of anything. And I guess I think one of the more interesting aspects of this is that this is a team that is doing this, that is making this run in the midst of suing United States Soccer.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that they are not paid the same amount as men, let alone they should probably be paid more. I know a lot of their bonuses are tied to winning the World Cup, and yet, you know, when Jill Ellis apparently, you know, if you're to believe the tabloid, scopes out the, you know, host hotel for the final, everyone comes in to go criticize them, but they're taking care of business, and I think it's just so impressive, and it's going to be interesting. It's interesting to see how just sort of subversive this women's national team is watching them.
Yeah, well, and they're, you know, at least the interviews that I've seen on Fox, the Fox Sports channels and whatnot that they've had them on, they're very interesting people, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, you don't always get that with, especially at a World Cup. You know, people don't want to.
You know, all the personalities are just everything. Yeah. It seems like, and so much in professional sports, it's just been watered down. You know, all our PR friends, Tim, we love you. Not anything to do with them, but it just seems like they try to just batten down any sort of sense of personality. And
these girls are
then,
talking
yeah.
from the beginning about, you know, art. It's like you said earlier, it's win or this was a bust. You know,
yeah.
they were willing to admit that. They're willing to talk about it. you know, they're just, it seems like a fun team. They seem to really like, I mean, the celebrations, I know that was a big thing after, in the Thailand
which
game.
Which was so dumb.
It was, but you just saw how much fun they're having playing soccer together, and, you know, I just think it's a good group, and you don't always get that, especially at the international level where, you know, it's you're not necessarily putting together a team for chemistry, and, you know, you only have to be together for a month, month and a half. You know, to have a team like this, and, you know, they've been together for a long time. I mean, a lot of these girls have, you know, are close to 100, if not more, caps. But, you know, I think it's just cool to see. And, you know, maybe it was like this last World Cup and I just didn't pay enough attention. But I've certainly paid attention this time, and it's been fun.
It is always that. I love watching the Women's World Cup because I like watching I like winning. I'm sorry. I'm a fair weather fan in that sense, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Especially when it's
Megan
America.
Rapinoe at all. Yep.
Any national pride thing you can have when you win is awesome.
And sometimes it's a little hard to, but these women make it a lot easier. Looking on the other side of the ledger, though, the men, they're trying to compete and capture some hardware themselves, the all-elusive Gold Cup. They managed to just win a nail-biter against Curaçao, which I found out was a country and not just something that you mix with liquor.
Yep.
And all of a one-nothing went over that.
They were blue.
This
they did
is
wear
true.
Blue.
Exactly.
What Curaçao normally is.
But, you know, looking at it so far, one of the big storylines emerging of it is you know, who is the number one striker for this team. Jassy Zardes obviously looked like money in that just complete dismantling of Trinidad and Tobago, where they were exorcising the demons of Bruce Arena's past. But other than that, I mean, he's had Josie Altidore has had a couple good goals, a couple good opportunities. What do we think, especially also, you know, looking at this from a crew-centric lens, and obviously, you know, Greg Berhalter, and there might be some fans out here wishing, you know, Greg, why would you ever leave? Please come back. I'm not saying
for
that.
God's sake.
I'm not saying that. I actually am not saying that. But you know, you look at Jassy Zardes, who, you know, had scored a couple goals quickly, and I think If you're a Columbus fan, you're hoping first that Jassy and Will Trapp get through this healthy. But, boy, if he can capture some sort of momentum coming back from it, or at least if they can stay away from, you were talking about how losing can be contagious earlier, Pat. Well, they've been away from that for a while, and they're in a Gold Cup that's very winnable, a tournament that they should at least have a bye basically to the finals into each time it comes around. So is this a good thing to sort of cleanse the palate and maybe if you're Jassy Zardes get back on the goal scoring streak again?
Well, I don't think you can score, like I said, too many goals. It doesn't matter where it is, club or country. And for a forward, that's what it's all about a lot of times is what kind of momentum do you have? I mean, you talked about there's momentum in losing and there's momentum in winning.
Right.
Well, there's also momentum in not scoring goals as a forward, and there's momentum in scoring goals. Now, the main thing is, can he take that and bring it to us, which we, you know, we haven't seen it consistently, especially the last probably 3 months with Jassy and the crew. We'll see. I think so. Again, Jassy can be kind of streaky, but I think every striker is, right? My concern right now would be with somebody like a Will Trapp. You know, he's not getting a ton of minutes right now, game-wise. On the flip side, maybe that's a good thing because he's going to be well-rested, ready to go. He's still getting good quality training. But I think when they both come back, we're going to need the best out of them because obviously the crew are having their struggles. But my thought is, who's more important when they do get back? Is it Jassy or Trapp?
That's a good question. Probably Jassy. I mean, just given the scoring, the lack of scoring, you know, I mean, he's been the only forward to put the ball in the back of the net. I mean, Will's obviously important for what this team does, don't get me wrong. But, you know, Will has 2 goals in his crew career, so, you know, something like that. So, though, you know, maybe he should just start banging them.
Yeah, from 40 out. Yeah,
I mean, at this point.
Yeah, I was actually disappointed they didn't try more 68 yarders against Orlando over the weekend. But I think like you said, Mike, it can be very good, especially if Jassy continues to start and continues to play well. Last night was not his best performance, but it wasn't the best team performance.
Right.
You know, they... I don't know. I felt like I'd seen that game play out over the 5 years of Greg here where, you know, they play a team... It was almost like one of the Open Cup games against a USL side where, you know, obviously he put out his first-choice team, but, you know, you play a team that you think you're going to beat. You know, they come out, and early they were dominating possession, and they get the goal, and then it's just, you know, Greg used to talk about it, that second goal, you know. Otherwise, sometimes, you know, a team can come back and tie the game. You never know what's going to happen, and it just never felt like they really got going last night. And yeah. I thought when they scored early, you know, Weston McKennie gets on the board. Christian Pulisic looked very good early. I thought maybe okay, this'll you know be a demolition, but it wasn't. I thought give credit to Curaçao, they played
absolutely
well. And I watched one of their games earlier in the tournament. A very athletic team, you know, which you saw multiple times, the American players getting beat to the ball. And I don't think it was a lack of effort necessarily. I think Curaçao's just got some real athletes on the team, and maybe they didn't expect that. But, you know, in the end, they got the win, which is what you want. I think maybe that wakes you up a little bit, and, you know, you're like, hey, we got to bring it next game. And maybe it leads to a few changes, and one of those could be Giassi Zardes. You know, I don't know. I felt weird about the game. I saw a lot of social media reaction nationally of people, you know, talking negatively about Greg. And it's like, look at the last few games. Like, what, you know, what do you expect the guy to do?
Wait a minute. Are you saying soccer Twitter is not overzealous all the time? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, look, here's the deal. I think there's two things with what you're saying, Pat. One is when it comes to whether it's going to be Josie or Giassi, I think they're both in relatively decent form. So I don't think you can go bad with either, quite frankly. I was actually a little surprised that Josie didn't come in
yeah.
that game because, mm-hmm. you know, there's a game coming up just, what, 3 days later? Right? It's 3 days, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
I think because it's Wednesday, right? So 3 days later, your striker, who's Zardes, he runs like a madman all over the field. You don't want him to be dead in the 70th minute mm-hmm. in the semifinal, right? But secondly, I'll tell you what, for the level of play that their players came from, a lot of them are like, you know, third division in England, fourth division. There's some guys that play in Netherlands. They're pretty solid technically.
Yeah,
there's some good players
was,
there.
They were surprisingly good. And like I said, I noticed that in the first game that I watched them play. You know, I mean, it's going to be dismissed as a bad performance because you only win 1-0 against a team, I think they said is, or maybe I saw this on Twitter, about the size of Mobile, Alabama.
Mobile.
But, you know, I mean, that does play a part, obviously, but that doesn't dictate the talent.
Well, also, a lot of them are guys that are born and raised in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They're pretty good at soccer, though.
Yeah, I've heard that they're pretty good, those guys over there. So, again, if we talked about this off there, if it's the Netherlands B team, that's pretty good, you know.
It might be the Netherlands like C team.
Well, that's still pretty good because yeah. I mean, historically the Netherlands are pretty darn stout. So, I think people will get over and forget this bad performance, quote unquote, with a win in the semi and a heck of a game in the final.
And it's interesting because you know you're playing a Jamaica team in the semis that you just played as a friendly
right.
before the Gold Cup and lost to. So, you know, you talked about wanting revenge against Trinidad
yeah.
for a few years ago. I mean, I think that it's the same group, more or less. I mean, there weren't all of the key guys, Pulisic and Bradley, some of those guys weren't there yet. But, you know, you want to show that game, be it a friendly or not, was, you know, just an off night, I would think. And, you know, you want to rebound from this performance. You got the win. It wasn't pretty. It was, in fact, ugly. I think you called mm-hmm. it boring, which yeah. is an accurate term. But, yeah, I think, you know, we know Greg. He's going to look at this film, you know, and make, you know, whether it's physical changes with the lineup or tactical changes, you know, and if they can bottle that first 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was, you know, I thought that was as good as Pulisic's played this tournament. And, you know, he is obviously key to what they're doing.
I'm going to disagree with you on Zardes' game. I think Zardes actually played a very different game than what he normally does. He got really one good service that he skied over the bar.
Right.
But he was going back, dropping back, creating that space for Pulisic and for McKennie to move around. So I don't think his game was bad. I was surprised that Jozy Altidore didn't come in about the 75th, 80th minute. But maybe he'll start the next game.
Right.
And Berhalter was just saving him. So you never know. But I think Zardes had a fairly decent game. Different than his normal game. But
and I think
pretty
the
good
other
game.
Thing that Greg Berhalter Greg Berhalter knows Jozy Zardes. And he worked with him for the last year, and look at how much he rode Jossie last. I mean, you didn't see any other. If there's anything that we know about Jossie, it's his. I mean, it's not just his speed, but his fitness. It is there. And Greg Berhalter, I think he knows. Not, I'd like to think that he still has a soft spot in his heart for Columbus and wouldn't want to, you know, just run Jossie ragged for that point. But I think he knows exactly, you know, what Jossie has with him, and I'm pretty confident that he won't misutilize him.
Yeah, well, and I think that's a very good point, Sam, in that he was doing the defensive work, he was opening space for others, and the defensive work maybe was the reason he didn't make the sub. You know, you're in a 1-0 game.
Right.
You know Jossie might get on the end of one and score,
right.
But you also know he's going to keep working well defensively. You know, not that Jozy doesn't do that. I don't think he does it as
it's not at the level or the rate that Zardes does.
Well, right, and Greg knows that Jossie will do it from minute 1 to minute 90, so maybe that's the reason you don't make the sub.
Sure.
But I also think, you know, Zach, again last night, you know, he made, I think there was only one really big save, but
that was a big one.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
It's the one he went diving for that was going upper 90.
Yeah. As we were talking about earlier with Neil, you know, you're going to miss that guy in Columbus for sure. It's still, I don't think it's really hit me yet that, you know, just because Will and Jossie are still gone, like, he ain't coming back, folks.
Yeah, he's not coming back with those two.
You almost wish he were a little bit less of a player just so he'd hung around for a few more years.
Well, you know.
I will say this. There is... 4 soccer tournaments. 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 soccer tournaments going on right now. 3 of them are male, you know, and obviously the Women's World Cup. But there's been some really, really good World Cup. There's some really good goalkeeping in the African Nations Cup. There's been some really good goalkeeping in this Gold Cup, too.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, I hope you're sending out, you know, Pat Onstad, I hope you're sending out scouts to watch. Yeah. Some of the goalkeeping that's going on in AFCON has been insane, and most of those guys are playing locally. They're not even playing in Europe. If they're playing internationally, they're playing in like another African country or like
you can probably get
some,
a
like, third or fourth division somewhere. Exactly. Yeah. Like today, El Shenawy, the goalkeeper for Egypt, one of my buddies was like, "Oh, doesn't he play in Europe somewhere?" I'm like, "No, he plays for El Ahly in Egypt." I'm like, the guy has played an outstanding World Cup because he was the starting goalie for 2018, and he's playing an outstanding African Nations Cup right now, and he still doesn't have a European contract. That's a guy you can swoop in and get for a pretty decent amount, even if you get him for a couple of years and then sell him on to a European team. You've made money.
Hey, you know, you're absolutely right, because he's one of the keepers I sign on FIFA immediately when I do a career mode, no joke.
Well, if it works for Mike's FIFA.
If it works for FIFA, clearly it can work in real life.
And we know that's how it works on Twitter, too.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you know, Pat, one thing I want to touch on about what you said about after McKinney scored that goal and thinking, the U.S. is going to score more. The look on the U.S. players' faces, it was almost like they said, well, here it comes.
Right.
Here comes the domino effect. We're going to score 5 or 6. And I think that was actually part of the detriment. They just thought it was going to happen because, hey, we scored now. And now it's just a matter of time. And that did not come to fruition.
Well, Massive Report will come to fruition after this break. We're back here with the Massive Report, and it's brought to you by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCGBag on Twitter and Facebook at GCGBag96 for all the latest news and thoughtful commentary. The Greater Columbus Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing. Real Salt Lake. This Wednesday, Red, White, and Boom. I might catch it. I might just be looking at fireworks. Mike Krosky, tell me why. And we're all obviously going to watch the Crew game, but why is this going to be the game that the crew are going to turn it around?
Because they have no choice. I mean, if they want to salvage anything in this season, every game matters now, right? And not to be melodramatic, but that's the reality. You know, a few years back, Rio Tinto Stadium, where, you know, Real Salt Lake plays, was a fortress nobody could win. You'd be lucky if you pulled out a draw, right? Now it's a little more formidable. And the crew have to absolutely get at least a draw in this match. Now, we just lost to Kansas City two games ago, right? MLS is a funky little league, right? Salt Lake just put a nice beat down on Kansas City over the weekend, okay? The score line ended up being 2-0, but really it could have been 4. They had one goal taken back off an offside call. Tim Melia made a couple of just remarkable saves that he had no business making. Easily could have been 4-0. The last couple of games, Real Salt Lake has been kind of finding their form. And the thing about Mike Petke, their head coach, he's a guy that players will run through walls for. And he's now been, this is his now third season with the team. He's finally got the roster that he wants. Something I just mentioned at the break to the guys is that when you have a guy like Joao Plata on the bench, not playing, that shows you can score goals. But, you know, they have Rusnak scoring goals. They have Sam Johnson scoring goals. If you have not seen the beautiful set-piece goal that they scored over the weekend, if you're a soccer nerd, I highly recommend looking that up, because it was drawn up and on the training ground and executed flawlessly. I mean, it was beautiful tactical skill and ability and implementation on that. So look it up. But I'll tell you what, if the crew come out playing like they did this weekend and missing opportunities and not getting shots on frame, it's going to be a rough one, because who's in goal right now for Salt Lake? Who's been in goal the last 15 years, I think? It'd be one
Nick Raimondo.
Yeah. Nick Raimondo. Okay.
Does that guy ever get old?
Well, I mean,
he was on the Miami Fusion.
Yeah. Yeah, he was on the...
That was an MLS team once upon a time, for those who
weren't for the kids out there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was pre-Beckham.
40 years young.
Yeah. Well, now here's the thing. Barring an MLS Cup matchup between Salt Lake and Columbus, this is the last time you will see Nick Raimondo playing against Columbus Crew, because he is retiring at the end of this year.
Or so he says.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I'll believe it when I see it.
There is the fountain of youth, and maybe he's found it. But you know, until otherwise, that's the storyline we're going to go with. But he can still make saves. He made a couple of pretty good ones in the game over the weekend. And again, he's probably the most consistent and best keeper that the league has ever seen. He's played 80% of the league's existence, which is pretty wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a crazy stat.
Yeah. So he still has it. So Salt Lake's I'm concerned about this game.
He's played two fewer years than Mofre Stadium.
That's a – wait, no. He's played
– He came in 2001.
2000. Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry, 2000. 2000, I was looking at his career postseason stats. I scrolled down a little too far. You're right.
Right.
Just 1 year less than Mofre Stadium.
So, you know, I think this is where Salt Lake is finding their form, and if I'm the crew, I'm worried.
Well, you've watched more of them than I have, but I'm just looking at their results. Only one win in their last four, but prior to that they had three consecutive, which seems like a novel concept of consecutive wins in Columbus right
Wait,
now.
Is that?
You're allowed to do that. No. I don't know if you knew that, but you're allowed to win games back to back to back.
You learn some every day.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, at this point every game's kind of a must win for this team, or at least must get points. You know, every time you drop another one of these, you're putting yourself further behind the eight ball. You know, like I said earlier, I really thought that this stretch of these two games would see the crew start to get at least some results, feel some positivity before they went back out on the road. You know, and I was hoping that, you know, you could get three wins somehow in these three home games, and then you wouldn't have to worry so much about this game out to Salt Lake, and then including the next weekend's game with Seattle there. But yeah, I mean, this has been an inconsistent Salt Lake team all year. I mean, they, you know, four losses in a row earlier in the season. It's been rather up and down. So if you're the crew, you hope you catch them on a down day and you can find something. I mean, at this point, I think the defense is playing well enough that if you could just get that first goal, you know, if you can score in the first half. And that's how I felt in both of these last two games, was like they've had chances, especially against Kansas City. They've had chances, and it's like, well, if you don't put one of these in, it's going to bite you. And then, you know, in against Kansas City, it was right after halftime. Against Orlando, it was right before halftime. They get bit. And then, and like we talked about earlier, I think then that pressure mounts, and like, this team's not coming from behind right now. I mean, they did it in Colorado, I guess, but they still lost that game.
They're putting too much pressure on themselves, and when they go down, it's over. Yeah. I mean, JJ even mentioned that after the game. And with Salt Lake, if you really want to look at it, think of it like this. They've gotten points in 7 of their last 11 games.
Okay, fine. Throw my stats
at them. I'm just saying, this is a team that I really think's coming around. And, I really hope Caleb Porter and his staff put together a game plan to battle this, because the thing with what Salt Lake's been doing lately is they're playing very direct. They're playing very, very direct.
Well, that could work, Tim McCruz. I mean, assuming Gaston Saro and Alex Trinali don't just stand there when things are happening that they should defend, like that second goal against Orlando, you have probably the two best center backs, and Jonathan's probably a little bit better than Alex in this department, but Alex's size, to handle direct play, and you do have to be cautious on the wings pushing forward with that, but, I think those are two guys you feel decently comfortable about with direct play. Also, you get Harrison Offal back, and I thought he was, before the red card, I thought he was pretty good, brought a lot of life
to the
game. And, I'd almost forgotten, because I think Hector's played well at that position, but it's just like, man, I forget how much, whether it's the dribbling, the shooting, it's not always accurate, it's not always perfect, but, it's just a spark that they don't have from anyone else. So, he served his red card suspension, and, maybe he can spark something for them. It'll be interesting. Caleb said today that there will be rotation, which is weird because there's not a lot of players to rotate.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if you see a Sosa get a start, maybe. I don't know. I would guess they'd go JJ up top again. Maybe they go back to Patrick.
I hope
just
not.
for rotational.
Maybe
sake.
They put both of them up top.
I don't see Caleb going to two up top. And I know a lot of people have asked about formation changes and whatnot. And maybe they do at some point. I mean, it's just hard to ask some of these players to adjust tactically right now, especially on a quick turnaround. They have made changes. Like, let's not pretend like they've just rolled out the same tactics. If you're looking at it at a very basic level, yes, they've run out the same formation. But Caleb's not only, adjusted tactically in terms of, how they're trying to attack teams, but they've tried different players. I mean, look at the number of guys that have played on the wings as they've tried to find somebody who can put in a good cross.
Right.
So there have been adjustments. But, it wouldn't surprise, maybe you get a Ricardo Clark start in this game. I mean, I'm just trying to think of where you could rotate, I don't think you need to start Connor Maloney.
Who would you put Ricardo in for Artur?
I mean, I would put him in for David Guzman, but I don't think Caleb's going to do that unless Guzman needs a night off. I guess. I mean, Artur hasn't looked great this year, really.
Oh. Yeah.
The wingers, Nico Hansen, again, I wouldn't be surprised if he starts just to rotate. But, there's just not a lot of guys to rotate.
So my concern with a team like Salt Lake is they've started to kind of implement this counter press, and that could be detrimental. Now, having Harrison back will be good because he's one of those guys that can recover.
Yeah.
But if the Crew are going to push the play, that kind of is what Mike Petke and Real Salt Lake want. So, in knowing that they need to get the first goal, meaning Columbus needs to get the first goal, if they press too hard too soon, it could be, it could fall right into the hands of what Petke and Salt Lake want.
Yeah,
so.
Well, and I mean, I guess the counterpoint to that, the counter press, if you will, to that is put the ball in the net. If you're going to push for an early goal, put the ball in the net. And, at this point, going back to the mental thing, I think it's just a mental block, I mean, no, they're not creating great chances, but they've created enough chances, I mean.
Okay, what's up with the refusal to take shots on goal? I mean,
Hector did it.
Hector is the only one who did.
Exactly.
And then JJ eventually finally took one. But it's like Luis Argudo, several times where he had a chance to just take a shot on goal. Even if it was a tight angle, just take a shot on goal and get a rebound and see what happens.
Yep.
And whether it whoever it is that's in front of goal, you got to take that chance. Especially like when you are passing it, just passing it across the box, in the mouth of the box, and you're passing it to the defender, that's not helpful.
Right.
Take a shot on goal. At least you'll possibly get a rebound off of it.
Sure.
And maybe put it in the back of the net. But
100%.
Somebody needs to take a shot. Somebody, somewhere, anywhere.
I think that's just a good, like, putting Luis Argudo's, you know, game in a nutshell. You need to take a chance. I mean, all of this is a huge opportunity for him. You know, a player who certainly that Caleb Porter has no allegiance to, that, you know, for as much as he seemed to be a kind of, you know, sold a lot to fans as, you know, this is a good, young, exciting prospect when he was originally drafted by the Crew. It seems that he's not, because when you look at all of the injuries and everything this team has gone through so far this year, we haven't seen much Luis Argudo. I think that is shown where he stands in Caleb Porter's hierarchy. And so to see him in there in that game and not taking those opportunities, not taking chances, looking exasperated at Pedro Santos when Pedro sent a through ball to him and he, you know, declined to run to it and say, oh, no, why didn't you put it right on my foot here? Well, the play was going on. Right. And that's but for these players, you just that's what frustrates me so much. I guess it's just you want to see guys seizing on this opportunity. Maybe that's just, you know, not trying to belittle or anything. Maybe that's what the quality is, and that's what you're working in. And you know, they are who they are, and they aren't bad depth players, but they're certainly not guys that are, you know, MLS caliber or replacement level players.
Sure.
And that might be the reckoning that we're having this season right now. I kind of feel like more and more that's what it is.
Yeah, I think right now, if I'm Caleb Porter, I'm going, look, guys, you have even a half of a step on a defender, just rip. Let's see what happens. Because clearly, now, here's the deal.
That's one way to avoid the boxes.
That's true. That's a good point. Well, you know, Porter was adamant, and he's not wrong, that the I got distracted. They were showing Crew Stadium on the TV, so I was wondering what was going on.
TV, yeah. Right now, it's City Hall. I believe they are,
talking about
it. I'm sure all of our listeners will already know by then. But, yep, they're talking about it at City Hall, and I'm pretty sure everything's going good.
Good.
Hooray, hopefully.
So, anyway, what I was saying was that, you know, he talked about the stats bear out, outside of the goal scoring, which happens to be the number one stat, that the plan is in effect and it's working. Meaning, you know, the shots are there, the possession's there. I mean, again, if you look at what we learned, shameless plug, again, on the article on Massive Report.
That's a story.
Yeah.
Just a piece on Massive Report.
Right.
It's like when you use the name of the title of the movie when it is one of the lines.
Right,
like
he's the demolition man. Anyway, you know, one of the things is if you look at the stat line from this weekend's game, and this isn't an anomaly, this is what we've seen all season. You know, the Crew had 58% of possession compared to 42. They had, 10 shots compared to 3. Mm-hmm. They had, Orlando had to make 45 clearances. Columbus had, I think, 6 or something, right? The pass accuracy in all 3/3 of the field, Columbus was higher. But in the one stat that counts, goals, Orlando was better, and that was the difference.
So 2-0.
2-0, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, again, Porter's not wrong in the sense that the plan is working, in the sense that the chances are there. But for whatever the reason, they're not finishing, and that's been the mystery all season long. So at some point, just go, look, just rip the freaking shot. Let's see what happens.
So we talked about it. I mean, this is coming up as a pretty dire stretch for Columbus. As Neil was talking about, there this is an opportunity as well to make up some space. But you look at it, Crew are playing, I mean, now and even not even a, you know, full rest going into this game against Real Salt Lake. But in a span of 17 days, so a week and a half, they are going to cram in one, two, three, four, five games, and then you put it back, basically give it, you know, six games in 3 weeks. If we're going back to Sunday against or Saturday against Orlando, this is a lot, huge test for this team, and I do think and most of this also on the road. This is more or less a stretch. You know, by the time this team comes back to Mafre Stadium in on July 20th against Montreal,
we're gonna know if they're gonna even stand a chance or if it's time to just blow it up completely and look forward to 2020.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So with that, you know, that being said, what do we think coming up here against this?
As bad as it is, yep. We still haven't lost 7-1 2 minutes
of the United. That's true. You know what? We do need to we need to bring it back a little bit because I don't care what else happened in MLS last weekend except for what happened to FC Cincinnati. 7-1.
Well, you know, this could be if the rest of the season keeps going for the Crew the way it has been, this is going to be one of those seasons like what it was like when Ohio State Michigan would play 15, 20 years ago, and if neither of them were national champion contenders, it's like, well, as long as we beat Michigan, yeah, we're okay. It's going to be the same thing here. Hey, this season stinks, it's over, but as long as we can beat those bums down south, hey, at least we got something. That's something the fans could hang their hat on, I suppose.
I'm hopeful for it, and of course, you know, it was interesting. Just a couple weeks ago, you were seeing some FC Cincy fans saying, "Oh no, like we need to go back to USL. This isn't fair." And so I just imagine what it was like after that 7-1. Oh boy,
who knows what Cincy's goals against or goals differential is?
I'll bring up this stat that was brought by
it's -27.
Oh,
boy. By Helltown Beer on Twitter. Which I thought was pretty interesting. And yes, I am quoting Halton Beer. Hi, Larry. The two pro soccer teams in Ohio have won a combined two games in the last 23 matches with one draw in there. The total is actually 7 points from 69 possible points.
So is that not good?
I'm new to soccer. The whole thing about hell is real. Is it hell is real because people are going to have to watch this game, games, or is hell just meh?
It's sad that we're comparing the Crew to Cincinnati because that was a roster built, you know, as an expansion club, built very poorly to come into this league. You know, they stuck with a head coach who I didn't believe was ready for the MLS level. You know, I'm not as connected down there as I am here in terms of, you know, players and whatnot. But, you know, just going into the season, I had very low expectations for Cincinnati, and that's so far come to fruition. I think it's disappointing for all Crew fans because I think a lot of people expected Cincinnati to struggle, and I think people expected the Crew to be, you know, at least middle of the Eastern Conference and, you know, certainly in the playoff hunt. And, you know, I think if anything, to your point, Sam, about the whole hell is real thing, I think people expected those games to be kind of Cincinnati looking for a consolation on their season and the Crew needing points to, you know, stay in the hunt and things. And, you know, I mean, the Eastern Conference is still allowing both teams, frankly, to still be alive, but... yeah, no one expected that the Crew... the Crew would be... in the same breath as Cincinnati, if Cincinnati's season's played out as it has.
How many teams, though, would be able to tread water if you, and I'm not making apologies for them, but if you take away two of their designated players and their starting goaltender for the, or goalkeeper season?
Come on, that's logic. That's sense. We don't do that on soccer Twitter. We don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. I think that, you know, especially a team like the Crew, you know, the budget that the Crew have had, because we haven't seen, and maybe we will start to see it this transfer window, but we haven't really seen the impact of new ownership in terms of the budgets and things. But you know, the Sporting Kansas Cities, the Real Salt Lakes, you know, that level of teams, you know, I mean, Kansas City's struggling quite a bit. I mean, obviously they beat the Crew, But, you know, they've faced a lot of injuries this year, and they haven't been able to be the consistent Kansas City, Sporting Kansas City team everyone in MLS knows.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that's a valid point. I think fans are just sick of hearing about injuries. You know, it'd be one thing if they'd lost, you know, 5 of 8 and had gotten a win and a tie in there. And then I think you're like, well, the injury, you know, the fact that it's been as bad as it has been is like, it's just mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I it's hard to put fingers. I mean, going and talking to these guys at practice every day, it's asking the same questions about, you know, what's going on, and there's no answers other than you got to score goals and you got to stop giving them up. And you know, but I think there is some validity to that. I think that, you know, the injuries and whatnot. I think that if this team were able to be a consistent lineup like we saw early in the year when they were 4-1, mm-hmm. you know, they're probably right about where we expected them to be. You know, injuries do happen. It's unfortunate that, you know, you lose a guy like Pipa for the year, a guy like Milton for the entire year. Harrison missed as much time as he did, you know, and we can talk about excuses all day.
It's not an excuse, it's reality.
Yeah, but you've got to still find ways to beat Kansas City at home. You know, you've got to do that. Like, that's a winnable game because of both teams having guys missing. You know, there was enough there for the Crew to win the game, and they don't. And those are the games that are frustrating. It's not losing 3-0 to LAFC or even losing at Philly early in the year when you don't have a bunch of your players. I mean, there's been certain games where the result was there and they just haven't taken it for one reason or another. And that, I think those are the frustrating moments.
Sure.
More so than, you know,
the Colorado.
Yeah, you know.
Right, but my thought is, are coaches supposed to score goals or no?
No, and I'm not putting this on Caleb, and I'm not putting it on the individual players. It's a collective thing.
Sure.
You know,
so you're saying Caleb not out.
Yeah, I have said I do not think Caleb should be fired.
Just stupid.
At this point, I think that he's, you know, I think he's a good coach. I do. I think there's a reason he's won at every level.
Well, I'm sure there are just lots of replacements. Rafa Benitez is available.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. We all know how you feel about Rafa Benitez. But yeah,
it's not fair. I'm actually crying.
So, you know, as we talked about earlier, I think if they could just get one win to just feel good about themselves. And
one
not
goal
have to,
first. To score great. First, yeah. I think it would be like popping a balloon and letting all the pressure out. That's what has to happen.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be this weekend.
Fingers crossed.
I think we'll find out if it will be this week, because I think we're going to have some picks coming up here. But before we get to those, I do want to thank our great sponsors at 180 Property Development. If you have a property design and or development need, build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. We're going to bring our whole panel into this. You too, Sam. But we'll have Patrick Murphy lead us off. Picks tonight for Salt Lake on Wednesday.
I keep picking this team to win. Like I said, I thought it would be these last two games where things started to turn around. I don't like being wrong. But I'm going to do it again.
Ooh.
I think they can go out there, you know, maybe, if Caleb changes the lineup a little bit, maybe there's, you know, Eduardo Sosa, who hasn't seen much time. Yeah, and, you know, not that I think he's shown a lot this year, but, you know, maybe he's able to, you know, just be that motivating factor that they need, because he knows this is his shot right before the transfer window to show maybe he's still got some value for this team, or, you know, somebody like that. A Nico Hansen, you know, we've seen him do it before. So I'm going to say 2-1 Crew. I'm not sure I believe it, but I'm going to say 2-1 Crew.
I'm going to say 2-1 Salt Lake, but at least the Crew score, and they score first. Would that be a slight victory? I mean, I'm not into that kind of stuff. Symbolic victories.
I think it would. I mean, like, I don't think they take it that way, but I think you do take some positivity. I was talking to John Kempen today, and he said he had been talking to somebody after the game, and he was just pissed that he gave up 2 goals. And whoever he was talking to was like, "Well, if you guys had scored twice and you tied 2-2, do you feel differently about that?" And he's like, "Yeah, I probably do, because, you know, we got a result." And,
that's fair.
You know, I think that's similar to what you're saying. You know, a 2-2 draw at home wouldn't have been great, but, you know, you would have felt good. You scored 2 goals. You scored 2 goals and you got a result. So, you know, I think right now, any moral, you know, I mean, they need points. Let's not kid ourselves here. But, you know, scoring a goal would be a victory right now.
I think that sort of depends. I mean, you know, it'd be one of those things like if we're going to put weight on, you know, if you get that one goal, that first goal, and that popping a balloon, and then to concede two more and lose, I think that could have an, you know, exponential effect. But, you know, at this point when they just haven't been able to find anything, you know, any goal is good. So I might go with you on that there as a bit of a moral victory. Sam, what do you have?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but...
No, you don't. You love being the
bearer. We actually have two games to do predictions for.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because we do play Seattle on the 6th.
The rest of it. Oh, well, that we just assume that it's going to be a dominant crew victory.
2-0 crew. Let's go to that against Seattle. That's what I got.
You know who I'm picking to win that Seattle game? The fireworks.
The fireworks game is my least favorite game of the year because it happens while we're in the post-game press conference.
Which sucks.
And all you hear on the recording afterwards is poof, poof, and then like little words in between. It's awful.
I love the fireworks game. It's probably my favorite. And in this kind of season, it's definitely my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go with a 3-0 loss. Ooh. For the crew and Salt,
against
Salt Lake.
RSL, okay.
And at least a 2-0 loss against Seattle.
Oof.
Like I said, the fireworks are going to win.
Hashtag FAMI out.
Yeah. Bring it.
All right, well, let's bring it back quick. Pat, let's get some Seattle in here. Matt, you know, this is the really good, informed predictions that the people want and expect from the Massive Report. Just immediately being thrown, hey, remember there's also another game. You need to just pick
I told
it
you,
right now.
I told you I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
I honestly hadn't thought that
far ahead. I mean, I literally just read the schedule in front of me and then just went on.
Yeah,
like,
but
oh, yeah, there's another game.
With how accurate we've all been this season, us just spewing out a score is probably going to be more accurate than when we actually think about it.
Oh, yeah. So,
isn't that how it works in FIFA?
Yeah.
2-1 Seattle. This team just...
Boo.
Especially if they don't get the win in Salt Lake, I feel like there's the pressure at home that's it's even worse. Like, I feel like the win will come on the road at this point.
Sure.
I mean, I hope everybody realizes that we don't enjoy predicting losses. We just don't think... We don't see anything that encourages...
Why are you
encourages...
smiling so giddily, Sam, because you're saying that?
Well... Krosky just laughed into the microphone and blew my ears out.
I apologize.
But, yeah, it's not like we're enjoying this. This sucks. But it is what it is,
we're
realistically.
Just being
honest. Until I see something better from the players or the coach or whatever, you know. I'm not holding this team to any standard until maybe next year. At least we're having next year.
That is a positive. Good job, Sam.
See, I brought her out. I was the bearer of bad news earlier. Now I brought good news.
All right, Mike, Seattle.
Oh, I thought I did that.
Oh, what did you say?
2-1 Seattle.
2-1. So 2-1 and also 2-1 bad. 2-1 bad guys both times?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay, so you heard from Mike there. 2-1 bad guys.
Krosky out.
I'm sure there's people that would actually appreciate that.
You know, for what it's worth, I have been researching both of these teams this entire time and actually for hours prior in my normal prep for this show. And so I'm going to have to go with a 2-1 victory for the crew on Wednesday night. We're not going to see crew finally get that elusive first goal. They won't, but they will come back after a Harrison-awful NYCFC playoff-style goal, just individual effort to tie it up, and then Gaston Sauro header at the death to get the win. And then they're going to ride that momentum.
Is that going to come off a free kick, or is he just going to run up the field like he does sometimes?
I think it's going to be him running up the field.
He did that like towards the end of the game. He's like, screw you guys, I'm taking this ball.
No, it's because he's you know, that to that whole conversation, at least he's one of those guys who wants to score a goal. You can tell that from Gaston, at least. So they're going to ride that
momentum.
Well,
he certainly didn't
too.
Look like he wanted to keep one out of the net the other night.
That's true.
Well, he didn't say that. He said he wanted to score.
Yeah. And then they'll ride the momentum from that glorious come-from-behind victory to a 3-0 shellacking of Seattle Saturday in Columbus.
What's wrong with that?
You heard it. We're turning
well,
it around.
You know, he spilled a drink already, so he's kind of...
Exactly.
I'm not sure what he was drinking.
You can smell it on my shorts if you want.
Yeah, it's on my shoes.
I don't want to smell anything. Have you been watching the crew this season?
Come on.
Yeah. All right, Bart. Well, you know, I almost, when I was going to predict this game, I said I'm going to do my best Bart impression and do 3-0 crew. But I was like, I can't be that silly. But Bart did it, and I appreciate it.
I did, and I always will. I'll always pick this team. But I'll always pick this team right here with us too. Mike Krosky, Pat Murphy, Sam Fahmy. It's been a pleasure. It always is, guys.
Indeed.
All right. Well, that should do it for this. We'll be back next week. Brian Phillips, I believe, will be back too. Hopefully, inshallah. Until then, bye, buddies.